Everybody, welcome to the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. I'm Matt Michaels with Sin City Steve and Rob Bossolari, and right now we're coming to you on a recorded episode. You know, we need to sneak in some of these recordings so that we can have some time during the holidays, especially Rob, who is going to get his head plugged and apparently end up with a huge afro by January 1st, I believe.
No, I want blonde hair.
Oh, perfect.
I want blonde hair and blue eyes.
That's cultural appropriation.
No, it's called me wanting to do the Trump thing to the fullest.
Ah.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, it's...
I'm going to be a beautiful, beautiful young white boy.
Well, at least half of you is.
I'll have all of the beautiful Russian models.
Oh, man. You know, Rob, if you ever do a PP tape, make sure we all see it, please.
Well, I mean, do you want like full color or do you want like grainy, you know, night vision?
Well, I mean, if it's coming from you, it's going to be half color anyway, so.
And you know, hey, you swung for the fences on that one.
Speaking of swinging for the fences, Sports Illustrated has released recently a list of the 20 biggest superstars in WWE history. We're going to kind of look at that list and kind of give our own lists. So here we go. Number one, Stone Cold Steve Austin, then Hulk Hogan, The Rock, John Cena, Roman Reigns, The Undertaker, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Bruno Sammartino. That's your top 10. Then you have Randy Savage, Kurt Angle, Roddy Piper, Edge, Randy Orton, Andre the Giant, CM Punk, Chris Jericho, Mick Foley, and Becky Lynch. That rounds out your top 20. All right. So, Steve, let's start with you. Just thinking about this list. We'll get to our lists in a little bit here, but just thinking about this list, what's your initial reaction?
So my thing is simply this. One of these things is not like the other, and that is no slight whatsoever on this individual. But let's put it this way. The 20th spot went to Becky Lynch. And so, yes, she did help to bring about a particular era of women's wrestling in WWE. However, I would say that there were other individuals, other women that would deserve to be above Becky Lynch in terms of overall qualifications, in terms of championship reigns, so whatever still, kind of a still, metric.
You're still big on then Bertha Faye being in this.
Oh, absolutely. The contributions that she made in the mid-90s for women's wrestling are just unbelievably, I don't even know what the fuck I'm saying right now. But no, you've got me all wrong there, sir. Somebody like, let's be real, somebody like a Charlotte Flair, or if you wanted to take it back, somebody like a Trish Stratus or a Lita, I would see on this list over Becky Lynch. And again, that's not meant to be a slight on Becky. She's definitely carved out a legacy within WWE, and will
realize you do realize why they put her on this list.
So that there was some female representation on this list.
No, because she's the man. So it's a 20 person list of just men.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. And that would be the single explanation for why the one female mentioned on the list is there, because at the end of the day, she's a man. Finger quotes. Of course. Of fucking course.
Anything else on this list shock you or catch you off guard or make you go, what the fuck?
I mean, so as I'm looking at this list, I actually am seeing a couple of names that, you know, it really kind of makes me wonder why they're not on this list.
And thus why we make our lists.
Exactly. Exactly why we make our own lists.
I'm making it. It says we're talking about it right now because I look at it, something. I go, nah, that guy doesn't belong there. This one doesn't belong there.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it remains to be seen, but the thing that really did stand out to me is sometimes with these these promotional lists, they'll refrain from putting in people who are currently contracted with other promotions and things like that. I do have to give SI props for including Chris Jericho, and even though he's now back with WWE, including CM Punk in the list. Whether or not they should be where they are is, you know, a topic that we're going to talk about here in a bit. But as far as names not on the list, you have to make a case for somebody like a Rey Mysterio to be on this list. And the reason why is if you look at it, what did Rey Mysterio help to bring to North American professional wrestling fans, especially American wrestling fans?
Midget wrestling.
Lucha Libre is something that, you know, other areas in the world, pro wrestling is an art and it's respected and it's loved. For the longest time here in the States, pro wrestling has been mocked and ridiculed. And I think that, you know, people such as Rey Mysterio, such as Eddie Guerrero, those guys really did help to bring Lucha Libre to a major, major audience in WWE. And I think that those accomplishments cannot be overlooked.
Yeah, unfortunately, Steve, you did overlook. He is on the list. He was number 619.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, thank God.
Booyaka. All
right, well, Rob, what are your thoughts on this particular list?
I thought it was if I asked AI to come up with a list.
No, this was SI.
Yeah, I know. No, it.
We'll get to that, Rob.
Yeah. There's no name on there that I'm surprised at. As far as Becky Lynch, she generated a lot of money for the company a few years ago. She was on the cover of 2K. So from a money standpoint, it makes sense that you would add her. Because she, as they would always say, George Steinbrenner would say, is I want people who are going to draw asses to seats. So Becky Lynch did do that. She did generate a whole new generation of interest in female wrestling. So that's not a surprise at all that she'd be on the list. I have no problem with Edge. I don't know. I can't see him being there. Bruno Sammartino is a classic. When you want to go back to an old school wrestler that was there at the beginning, it's really no surprise that a lot of the people on this list are Attitude Era, or just outside of the Attitude Era. Roddy Piper didn't make it to my list only because I didn't see he didn't have as many belts. But no, it all makes sense. There's a couple of people I would have put on there, and my list has a couple of really controversial ones because, outside of what they did in their personal lives, they did a lot for the industry. So,
That's how it should be because it's, again, your personal list. So we'll get to that in 1 second. You know, I think that when you look at this list, it's fairly basic. You know, there are names on this list that should be on the list, right? As compared to, like you said, like Becky Lynch is a questionable one, but for the most part, every other name on this list is is arguable that they belong. You know, the spots might be questionable too. Arguably, I think Roman Reigns at number 5 is pretty fucking high. Above The Undertaker. I don't know. Makes me a little angry, but, you know, just it is what it is. Let's start. Rob, you want to start off with your list?
All right, and I'm editing one thing as I go, but we'll start with the the top. The Rock. The Rock is still active. He keeps reinventing himself. He always stays relevant while still maintaining his overall persona. When you get in and you see a match with Dwayne the Rock Johnson in there, and he's in the zone. It's not just I'm trying to promote a movie, but we're in the zone. The stuff he did with Cody Rhodes, with Mama Rhodes, and making the kid bleed and smearing blood all over the place, all the way back to the Nation of Domination. When you see him do the People's Eyebrow for some of the first times, to you know, it's just been iconic match after iconic match. WrestleMania 17, Stone Cold. You have so many incredible matches, but the promos he cuts are iconic. There are little kids who know The Rock's promos who were barely zygotes when the guy was wrestling. I mean, this is freaking amazing that you can go, it doesn't matter what you think, and you know he's going to say that. He's inspired so many other wrestlers, and yet there's still nobody as good as him. He's just got to be there in the first. Stone Cold. Stone Cold, equally one of the most iconic WWE guys in the modern or any era. You know, Stone Cold says, I just wept your ass. What? The you know, people still saying what in rings that aren't even WWE rings. You got to have Undertaker after that. Another guy, when you hear that bell ring, that means some shit is about to happen. You take a crap when you hear, boom, you're like, oh, fuck, and the lights go purple, blue. Shit. All right. This guy is another guy who's a virtuoso. He stayed with it for so many years, stayed relevant, and became a WrestleMania fixture. You weren't assuming that, you were assuming he was going to win, but you wanted to know how he was going to win, what it was going to take for him to get that W. This is where I start to move off, and I'm reading my list out of order because I'm changing it as I'm thinking about it. Ric Flair. You might go, Ric Flair didn't do enough in WWE. He had an Iron Man freaking Royal Rumble, wrestled bell to bell. He earned his stripes in that company. What was that, 91? 92. Where he did 92. 92. All right, wasn't that far off. And then, you know, Heenan's there interviewing him. Ric Flair earned his stripes in every promotion he's been with, sans AEW. So he definitely deserves to be on that list. Next, I got Jericho. I think Jericho deserves to be higher on the list because he's another guy that kept reinventing himself. My criteria is not only were you good at one point in your career, not only do you have good, you know, cut a good promo, have good catchphrases, but you've got to be able to be dynamic and do it over the years. All of these guys either maintained their storyline or maintained their persona and kept it fresh or kept reinventing themselves. You cannot have that priority in that, you know, that parameter and not have Jericho on that list. Then I have John Cena. John Cena has been a fixture, did more to push the company forward. And at a time when they had a really bad light on them, coming out of the steroid scandal stuff, you needed the babyface of babyfaces. And he was a polarizing figure, but he would not break. He stayed a babyface. And you consistently knew that you were going to get a main event worthy match from him every time. You always got a match that was worthy of the hype, even if you knew what the set list on the moves were going to be. And he knew how to put the other guy over. He knew how to get the crowd excited. And even when they booed him, to get somebody to boo you means they're still engaged. Right. To have heat on you means that you still have the crowd engaged. So that's worthy. After that, got to have Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels is a guy that he doesn't have the same longevity. I consider him the Don Mattingly because he burned bright and then disappeared for some time. But you had the founder of D-Generation X, great in the ring, can cut great promos, looks amazing, can make some of the most iconic ring entrances coming down the rope when they figured out how to get somebody to come down from the ceiling safely, you know. And they did a damn good job. Then you have Triple H.
Really quick, it wasn't them who figured that out. The entrance is actually what the Mighty Duck would do for the Anaheim Ducks games. he would come in like that, and that's how, why they used it. Is
But you, here's the thing. You now see, I consider you guys to be wrestling aficionados. Steve didn't know that. A lot of people don't know that. You're going to think that was a Shawn Michaels thing. Then after that, Bret the Hitman Hart. Got to have Bret the Hitman Hart. The screw job, it really belies all that he did and building up this incredible career and really putting WWE in the map, which leads up to the Attitude Era. You don't have the Attitude Era without Bret the Hitman Hart, because he built all that hype that gets you there. He starts to really get a new generation of people focused on wrestling. And you have great, great, great freaking matches with him and Shawn Michaels, Stone Cold. He literally has that whole next generation of wrestling on his back and bridges the 80s to the Attitude Era so damn well. So you definitely, you know, have to have that. Then we go back to the 80s, Macho Man Randy Savage. Macho Man Randy Savage. And I don't know if did I mention Hulk Hogan?
Nope.
Yeah. Macho Man Randy Savage, great foil for Hulk Hogan. Some of the best promos. He really was the cream of the crop. You know, the stuff that he was doing is kind of a lost art. Cutting a promo behind the stage, not in the ring where you're waiting for the audience reaction, but behind the scenes where you don't have an audience reaction. You're just cutting a promo. You don't know how it's going to be necessarily received later on. Even when people cut promos now, they kind of do this thing where they'll wait to hear the audience outside. And I'm like, no, don't do that. Just say what you got to say. That's what made The Rock great. Say what you got to say. Fuck if the people chant your name afterwards and you can hear it echoing in the back. No, he was one of the original guys to do that, where he's cutting a great promo. It's being taped. It doesn't matter. It is entertaining. Jack Tunney screwed me out of the match. Should have been the... So you think you should have been the Intercontinental Champion? I would have been too. Great. He's complaining, but it's entertaining. And it's unique, and he's a weirdo. He's not bleeding red, white, and blue. That's what made him good for his time. He was truly a weird guy. You know, when we talk about, oh, well, we've got gold dust and we've got, no. This guy was weird. He wasn't a normal American strong guy. So that's what I like about it. Plus, of course, all the stuff he did in the ring. After that, CM Punk. Okay. CM Punk, pipe bomb. The incredible matches, the fact that the guy was veritably clean edge, straight edge, I was going to say clean edge, straight edge, and could still put on banger matches.
Absolutely.
Where you could believe it, where I don't, you don't look like you're roided out. And that's why they made him the champ for so long. What was it, 2010? He was there for about a year and a half because they had to have that clean image, but he could sell, and he could put on another guy who could put on a clinic, do the match, get back and cut a promo of why he's pissed. And he could be angry at the fans, or he could be angry at the company. And he can also be, you know, he can also be the company guy. He could be part, not the administration. What's the word I'm looking for? But he could be one of the team players and go the Triple H route. The stuff he did with Paul Heyman, where then afterwards, after a year of being Paul Heyman's guy, he goes, oh, Paul, I don't work for you. You're like a friend. And keep reinventing himself in the middle. Like a lot of guys, they get a hot streak and they don't reinvent themselves in the middle of their run. He would do a 180 on his character in the middle of a run where he's over. You know, that's stupid good to be able to do that. Who does that? MJF on AEW might be able to do that, but to go from babyface to heel and still have the crowd interested in what you're going to do. That's a skill set. Now, after that, I asked about if we could count a tag team as a individual. And Matt, you said, yeah, I'm going to put the Hardy Boys in there because the Hardy Boys are dynamic. Jeff Hardy as a charismatic enigma is dynamic. But Matt Hardy.
Excuse me. What? I guess you can use the word. That's cool.
Yeah.
Enigma.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Hold on. When these moments happen, I need to go to my Bob Ross comfort doll. See, if you learn from it, it's not a failure. That's when I'm stressed. I go to my Bob Ross action figure. I do have a Bob Ross action figure. It's a bobblehead action figure with catchphrases like... Yeah, you have to have the dark.
I'll see your Bob Ross, and I'll give you. God.
You see, you have to have the dark. Oh no!
Get the crap out of me! Fix my foot.
There we go, Ahmed.
I can't.
That terrorist. Anyway,
the Hardy Boys
are on your list, and
the Hardy Boys are on my list because you can be entertaining outside the ring, you can be entertaining inside of the ring. They are both, and I put them as a group because individually they could do something and then come back tag together, and every time they come back, it's like this great reunion, and it could happen a year down the road, and they could show up in any promotion, and you go, oh my God, it's the Hardy Boys, and they are another one of those timeless wrestlers as a unit where they show up in any promotion, any time in their age, and you go, well, are we comparing them to when they were kids? No, we're not comparing them to when they were kids. We're looking at them now going, you just did a freaking swanton bomb off a gigantic ladder. Jeff Hardy, you did a cage match with Randy Orton where Randy Orton got a chunk of his leg ripped out and he wins. And except for that bizarro finish where he just flops on the, you sold the whole way through, Jeff. Matt keeps reinventing himself, brings his Broken Matt character to WWE, and you go, oh, well, they're not going to be able to do anything because Jeff had been injured at the time, and you team him up with Bray Wyatt, and again you find gold. Again you find gold. Your total nonstop deletions, which you could take a concept from TNA, bring it over to WWE, and the audience get behind it. Where in WWE did we have these segments beforehand where an entire match was taped off-site and somebody who paid tickets and sits in an arena to watch a Titantron and you're entertained because, fuck, that guy made it entertaining. So then they do vignettes like that with Undertaker and AJ Styles, and you go, well, I guess it can work. Yeah, because that guy's a fucking innovative genius. He is a genius. Next, Mick Foley. Mick Foley is another guy who's insanely charismatic, can take bumps like nobody's business, puts other wrestlers over who didn't necessarily need it, puts announcers on the map, okay? Jim Ross is a fixture when you think of some of the best announcing, but would you not think about it unless this guy jumped off a cage and then you hear, as God is my witness, he is broken in half! And you go, wait a minute. We think about that match and we think about Jim Ross's reaction to it, but the guy had to do it. And he does that. He puts his body on a line. He comes out as three different personas, Cactus Jack, Mick Foley, Mankind. Oh, wait, four, Dude Love. And then incorporates them all into Mick Foley. And now he becomes the wrestler who doesn't look muscular, doesn't look charismatic, doesn't have the physique. And you want to strive to beat him. You're going to have Randy Orton strive to want to beat him. Holy shit, that says something. When a guy doesn't look like The Rock or Hulk Hogan, and he's your champion, and people get behind him. And if he's not the champion, he could do a Rock and Sock connection, be insane out of his mind, and you don't look at it in the same sense that you would look at, like,
Bruno Sammartino?
Not Bruno Sammartino. Cobra.
Sergeant Slaughter?
No. The wrestler.
Oh, Santino Marella.
Santino Marella.
Yeah. But I said that in the sense of you could have him go that route and you don't look at it as just comic relief because he's going to be that insane and still be a main eventer. The I Quit match with The Rock is an iconic match. Wasn't for a belt. And the guy, we don't remember it for the zaniness. Remember it for the tenacity.
For a belt.
It was an iPod. Yes, I was. Yeah. But it was for me watching that. That was one of my earliest memories of watching wrestling. And that will say something that I didn't think that it was for that. I remember it not for the belt. I remember it for the fact that he would not go down. I remember it for the fact that he walked and brought the match over to his wife and kids and took a chair shot in front of his wife and kids so he could get their reaction to make the match that much more memorable, that much more real. When somebody says wrestling is fake, and I go, wait a minute, before the match, they cut his scalp open so it would deliberately gush blood. Okay, then. That's fucking real. You got to put your body on the line to do that. You have to be willing to take those bumps. You have to be willing to sacrifice like that. And you have to be willing to put your family in that much anguish and then try to be entertaining a week later, even though you just went through that physical hell, and then be slapstick about it all.
Not a week later, buddy.
A day later.
Next night.
Yeah.
Next night.
Yeah. But that's my point. That's why he is definitely on that list. Next guy, Andre the Giant. You don't have all of these great experiences if you don't have Andre the Giant. You need that first big guy, and you need somebody with a warm heart that could go in the ring, wrestle, and be beloved by people all over. Andre the Giant is what makes Hulk Hogan Hulk Hogan. If he does not lift him up in WrestleMania 3 and toss him on his back, nothing happens. WWE does not become what it is now. It's the reason why it's in the highlight reel when they do those opening video packages. Next one, and I said it'd be a controversial one, China. Joni Laura was the real women's trailblazer. I don't want to hear about Trish Stratus. I really don't want to hear about her. Okay, call me when she gets an intercontinental belt, not once but twice. And the second time was a fluke. It was an accident with Eddie Guerrero. But the first time wrestling Jericho, where she, the woman, has a valet and cat come out for her. Yep. And when she comes out to wrestle with D-Generation X, you did not go, oh, it's a woman, we have to pull her a punch. No, nobody pulled a punch on China. When they put her in the women's wrestling circuit, when they had her wrestling the other women for the women's belt, I was throwing shit at the TV because a year earlier, she's tagging with Billy Gunn. So why the fuck are you insulting her like this? She earned it. She earned it. She came out as a weird valet of this muscular woman for then Hunter Hearst Helmsley coming out in an English riding outfit when at that point all of his valets were these beautiful ball gown wearing women. And that's what women were to do. They were all to be Miss Elizabeth. And now you have China come out and you're like, holy shit. She's built like a brick shit house. I wonder what would happen if, oh my God, she's beating the shit out of the men and they're fighting her back. Okay. If you look at Rhea Ripley tried to do a German suplex on Tozawa and she almost had a hernia. Her eyes explode out of her skull. And what's the German suplex? You grab the guy from the back. He jumps into it. You're just go taking the momentum. Yep. If you do it right, you're not doing much work at all. You're just holding on to the guy. The other guy who's getting knocked on his head is the one doing the work. But there's China wrestling the men. And it was believable because she was doing it. You know, not to get off WWE, but when they had that Kurt Angle feud with Jeff Jarrett and Karen Jarrett, and they said, well, who's going to get in your corner? What woman's going to support you? And China walks out. You're like, holy shit. That's the reaction you had when China came out to the ring was holy shit. They treated her like an equal in that ring. Watch any of those late 90s, early 2000s matches. She was treated like an equal in that ring, and she earned that respect. That's why she deserved to be on the list. With that said, the next two, Eddie Guerrero. Eddie Guerrero was this guy who was dynamic. He was great. He came in from WCW as the Radicals with that whole crew. And what's the first thing he does? A five-star frog splash and breaks his arm. Snapped his elbow on a five-star frog splash at his very first outing. And you go, oh, fuck. This guy with this mullet. He looks scrappy, kind of. He's not that tall. He's 5'8". What is he going to accomplish? He's going to be a background guy. He's going to be part of that ensemble. And then a few years later, he's going down in his 6'4 Impala, bouncing up and down with China sitting next to him as his girlfriend. And he's got the belt, and it is incredible. The energy that guy brought to a match. another guy who could cut promos, another guy who can build people and put other wrestlers over. That's what was missing in any promotion these days. The intercontinental scene in WWE was fucking incredible. It wasn't like, all right, let's get through this match. Come on, come on, come on. It was, Jesus Christ, look at these wrestlers. And then you get them to the main belt status and they deliver and they hold their own against guys a lot bigger. Think about that. He's post-Attitude Era, where these guys were Triple H, Stone Cold size, Randy Orton size. These guys are 6'4", 6'3", 250 pounds of pure muscle. And this guy's 5'8", 5'9". He's holding his own, and he's got the whole crowd behind him for being a scumbag, lie, we cheat, we steal. And it sticks in your head to this day. The Three Amigos, everybody does that move. Everybody does all of his movesets today, and it's considered a sign of respect. So they boo you, Dominic Mysterio, when you're impersonating this guy, but the guy's impersonating him because he's paying homage to him. Even as a heel, he pays homage to this guy. 20 years later, we're almost at that 20-year mark. He died in, what, 07?
It's 20 this year.
Okay, okay, 2005, which is then the reason why we have my last guy on the list, Chris Benoit. And that's a controversial one, because I don't want to give any shine on how his life ended. His life ended as a result of all the things that he put himself through, but what he's doing in the ring cannot be ignored. He was a guy who was putting on clinics with Jericho and Kurt Angle, where these matches were to be seen. He had must see matches, and they were for the IC belt. He had technical wrestling defined. That's the guy. When we say technical wrestling, holds, locks, this is that guy that's doing a clinic on the mat where you're going, all right, avoid this guy. He's not going to outpunch you, but he could. He's going to put you in a hole that you're going to have to exert a lot of energy to get out of. That if you're on the mat for 5 minutes trying to get out of a hole, the audience is not bored. Because usually, if Jericho's got somebody in the walls of Jericho, you know, Boston Crab, for a few minutes, after a while, you're like, oh, look at this. It's a figure four leg. They're going to slap each other to get out of it. No. This guy's got you in a hold, and now he's going to put you over because you got to figure out how to get out of it. And also, the expressions on his face in the ring are memorable. He really is the rabid Wolverine. If I were to imagine a character who has the physique of what Wolverine was to be in the comic books, this 5'5" looking Canadian ripped out of his mind, and he walks down to the ring like that. That he had no neck. His neck was just one gigantic muscle. He was somebody you feared. When he wins, he starts crying. So you find out that this guy has emotions that run deep. And that's what made him so compelling, because he had dementia. All of these characters on my list were guys with dementia.
He definitely had dementia.
Yeah, I didn't even want to go. Yeah, he did. But that was CT damage. That was all of that damage that he took to his brain. And what do we get from that? You sweep him under the rug. But if that doesn't happen, a lot of people aren't saved down the line. Unfortunately, it's a morbid way to think about it from my perspective, but that allows him to go, whoa, we have to re-examine. What was it this year that, you know, Kevin Owens put Randy Orton's in a pile driver? That move is banned in WWE. All right. And everywhere else they do it. But what does that lead to when you're taking bumps on the head like that repeatedly, even though they put you through the knees and they try to cradle it and absorb the impact, but you're taking these bumps and he's doing that flying headbutt. That flying headbutt is literally, yeah, the head might hit the shoulder, but from hitting the mat to hitting the head to the shoulder, you're putting so much more damage on your brain. Nobody does that move anymore for a good reason. But yeah. It allowed for so many other great, you know, things to happen that saved other wrestlers' lives and elongated their careers and their health. Yeah. But he was an incredible performer and champion.
Yeah. Absolutely. And speaking of doing bumps, we'll go to our AEW fan here. I'm sure Tony Khan probably has his own list that is like Razor Ramon and anyone else who is associated with doing or selling cocaine down in, you know, the Florida Keys. But all right, Steve.
Hold on, Steve, get a toothpick.
Just like how Father James Mitchell is somewhere on that list as well, I'm sure.
Right, well, of course. All right, Steve.
So for me, admittedly, there is some bias as of the last, I'd say, 40 or so years. Looking at this list, some of the legacy names for WWF, WWE, are, you know, some people might view them as not being as high as they should be or whatever. I'm not going to go into painstaking detail for every single entry on this list, just because, quite honestly, y'all should know who these people are and why they made the list. And that wasn't a pun. Anyway, right up at the top, like him as an individual or not, Hulk Hogan. I do have Hogan at one. I have Stone Cold at two, because obviously Attitude Era. But right there at three, I do have The Rock. So I think that those two are damn near inseparable. They will always be forever linked. Number four, I have The Undertaker. Longevity and career and gimmick changes have been unbelievable. What he's been able to do with that character from beginning to end. Number five, and I can't believe I'm saying this, especially for people that know me outside of the podcast, John Cena. Yes, I'm putting John Cena at five, which, whatever. Six, I do have Ric Flair. Seven, I've got Shawn Michaels. Eight, I have Bret the Hitman Hart. Nine, I've got Triple H. 10th, I've got the Macho Man Randy Savage. And here's a name that hasn't been mentioned yet. Brock Lesnar at 11. Hmm. I do have Brock Lesnar at number 11. If you want to look back, let's call it what it is. Arguably one of the biggest moments in WrestleMania history was the end of the streak, something that I was fortunate enough to be there to witness live. And I can safely say that it was unlike any other moment that I've ever experienced in the history of live professional wrestling that I've attended.
Well, the arena... They still use your picture every time they show that with your eyes bugging out, right? That
wait, was you. Wait, you were black 2 years ago?
Palette swap.
Jesus.
Palette swap. But no, it, in all seriousness, if to ignore Brock Lesnar in light of, you know, him being linked to whatever shit went down with McMahon, he definitely deserves to be on this list, though. Elsewhere, at 12, I do have Bruno. The contributions that he made to the business cannot be, you know, overstated. 13, I do have Chris Jericho. The reinvention. You made mention of it as well, Rob. He continues to reinvent himself. Sometimes I wish that he would, you know, take some sabbaticals or take some time away, but
I am the learning tree,
bro. To keep doing what he's doing as of this moment is truly astounding. And I know that that extends outside of WWE. At 14, I have Eddie Guerrero. A career cut extremely short and way too short. Had things not gone down the way that they did, he would definitely be much higher on this list. That is for certain. Number 15, I have Kurt Angle. I think Kurt Angle is a case study in people who took to the business and just were naturals at professional wrestling. If you look at what he accomplished in the amount of time that he was at the forefront, it is truly remarkable. Somebody who had not had professional wrestling training, but was athletic enough to be able to step in and make the contributions that he did in the relatively short amount of time that he did. At 16, I have Randy Orton. I think that Randy Orton is somebody who's always been in John Cena's shadow, unfortunately. And contrary to whatever you might think, he deserves to be on this list. Number 17, I do have Andre the Giant. Now, obviously, I was not privy to much of what Andre did outside of his WWE run or WWF run. But again, looking back on legacy and territorial days and the way that he was booked all across Europe and across the world is truly astounding. There will never be another human being like Andre the Giant. And polar opposite, number 18, Rey Mysterio. So going from a giant to Rey Mysterio. I made mention of the contributions that Rey had to bringing Lucha Libre to this country, as well as Eddie. So again, they find themselves on this list. 19, I do have Edge. And you stole my thunder, Rob. I intentionally didn't mention her in the beginning because I wanted this to be a surprise. My 20th entrant was Chyna. I think that
you hit
the nail right on the head. For her to accomplish what she did, not just in women's professional wrestling, but in professional wrestling as a whole, and competing for those men's championships, it wasn't like as if she was booked as it wasn't like as if you had to suspend your disbelief.
No, nope.
It was something that she was a legitimate contender for those championships, and you definitely, if you're the "it's still real to me" guy, yeah, you could go in and justifiably believe that Joni Lauer beat the shit out of whoever she was in the ring with that night. And that was a testament to her. That was a testament to the way that she was booked. And unfortunately, her life met the end that it did. But again, she made some great contributions to WWF and WWE. And I'm going to throw out a name as an honorable mention, somebody who you're probably at first going to be like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan. Ooh. The reason why I'm giving him an honorable mention is because technical wrestling, I didn't want to necessarily focus on Chris Benoit, but this is a name that ties in that bringing technical wrestling to the forefront and actually having people appreciate technical wrestling again. There are a few people that I mentioned on the list that had that capability, but yeah, I definitely had to mention Daniel Bryan as well.
Well, I'll say one thing. If we're doing an honorable mention, Captain Lou Albano. I'm from New York, and he lived in Mayapak before he passed, and those are some of the funniest commercials you'd ever seen. Go look up some of the old Captain Lou Albano tire commercials.
Oh,
trying
yeah.
to sell tires. The best.
All right. So that's, again, a lot of crossover. My number one is, of course, John Cena, because he is the greatest of all time, period. No mention of anything else. And mainly because there has never been a wrestler who, once they went from heel, maintained babyface status for the whole time, and the reason being was because of the fact that he was such an icon for kids that instead of destroying it like Hogan did, the whole idea was to maintain that hero status so that these kids could believe in something. And these are, you know, let's be honest, a lot of those kids are no longer with us. So think about what that guy has done just in that capacity.
That's true.
And that really, fans hated the fact that, oh, he was pushed and blah, 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 and blah, blah. And the honest answer is, yeah, you did, because you were a 42-year-old male who's probably pissed that Sinj gave freaking Junakana isn't in the WWE and champion because he's such a goddamn technical wrestling god. And John Cena gets everything. Yeah. Big deal. John Cena is what wrestling is about in the day and age of television. And that goes back to Gorgeous George. And that's it. It's fucking stories. It's a character. And if it's something that kids can believe in, and take it to the next level and help make these kids' lives better and help some of them survive, then awesome. And then go on and be a fucking, not only a movie star, but a guy who does every single television commercial, every single fucking voiceover, every single talk show.
Oh, shit.
It's unbelievable. And that's what he wanted to do from day one, and he achieved it. Hogan is number two because Hogan set that bar, right? He's the one who made professional wrestling the, you know, the pop culture phenomenon that it became. He did turn heel and again brought it to the forefront, but played that to those people who idolized him when they were 10 and now were able to think that that was cool shit when they were 21. Very simple. Austin, number three, and you can't beat, you know, what Stone Cold did in terms of taking it to the next level of blending that, you know, taking that heel
what? And making
the heel popular forever.
Yeah. What?
I'm not doing that, Rob. I'm not doing it. I'm just not what? Doing it. I'm not doing it. It doesn't matter. What? Okay. Number four, Undertaker. Hands down, you know, again, you just can't say enough about what he meant and how he really is, you know, a pillar of what WWE is. Shawn Michaels, number five. Again, Mr. WrestleMania. You just can't deny what he was as a rocker to becoming what he became in terms of just iconic and having these matches that, you know, will always be remembered. And then now what he's doing in NXT, this is a guy who probably by all his accounts, if you read his books, should have been dead in about 1999, 2000, somewhere around there. So for him to reinvent himself, it's just remarkable. Six, Randy Savage, not necessarily a weirdo, all right? But definitely the second, I'd say, coolest bad guy of that era, you know, to take that bad guy popularity. And then the one thing that he doesn't get credit for is that he was the one person that was so over that they were able to go, you're the champion now, and take it off of Hogan. Yeah. Didn't put it on Andre, didn't put it on DiBiase. You had to keep it on a face as per Vince McMahon's philosophy for 9 years, you know, or 10 years almost, you know, and that was huge, that Savage could carry that. And then also become a commentator and, you know, go back and listen to some of his commentator stuff. It's fucking hysterical. Triple H, number seven, doesn't get enough love for the fact that he carried that company between 2000 and 2010. You know, he had 10 years where it was solid Triple H and people fucking hated it. You know, push down our throat, push down our throat. Yep. Look where he is now.
Holding shovel.
Yep. And, you know, guy took slop buckets. The guy took, you know, supposed to be king of the ring.
Had all because he hugged somebody in the ring after a match.
Right. Right. Married the boss's daughter. I mean, you know, like there is so much about him that, but the thing that stands out the most is that he is the type of guy who fucking cares. He cares more about wrestlers, wrestling, the industry, the business than anyone can really grasp. And it's very, very telling the way things are going now. He was the right guy, and it makes sense. Roddy Piper, number 8. Roddy Piper was that first cool bad guy. And by the time WrestleMania 3 came and he left to do They Live, you know, you had to turn him face. And until he came back at WrestleMania 18, I think it was, or 19, he was face in WWE. Never went back to heel because he was so fucking over. Macho Man went back to heel, became the Macho King, and did all that because he was, you know, so good at that. But Piper, you just couldn't make him a heel again. And even they had problems in WCW trying to make him a heel when he was there because he, you just loved that guy. All right. Andre the Giant. Anybody want a peanut? Let's think about that guy as mm-hmm. being one of the greatest guys ever. The Rock, number 10. Again, you know, enough's been said about Rocky, especially coming from Rocky fucking Maivia to what he became. It's crazy. Mick Foley. Mick Foley is one of those guys who doesn't get enough credit in terms of the development of both Hunter and The Rock. Go back to 96 and 97 and 98. Those three were intertwining and interweaving, and that made each of them better. And the reason that Foley was able to become champion is because he was able to elevate those two guys. And it goes and show, you know, show the last 2 years of Foley in 99 and 2000 there, all about putting Hunter and putting The Rock up on the next level. It's unbelievable how much he contributed to those guys, but let alone the feud with The Undertaker, man. Let's be real. This guy was doing boiler room matches with Taker. He's doing buried alive matches with Taker. He's doing the Hell in a Cell with Taker. Everything you could possibly imagine those guys did within about a 3 year period. And it never got old, never got stale, which is very hard to do. Bret Hart, not only himself, but the Hart Foundation was one of the first tag teams that made being a heel tag team cool. They were fucking cool. And then Bret, you know, gets this whole mantle and is the baby face. As soon as the Hart Foundation turned, he carried out baby face for the longest time. And he's one of the guys that actually they did pull the trigger on people being sick of him and making him heel. And he elevates Stone Cold at that point. And the rest is history. Bret Hart is probably the most important person to Stone Cold's career.
Agreed.
You know, Razor Ramon. Razor, you can't forget the bad guy. The bad guy was so crucial in terms of being in that spot of that weird, you know, it was such a short time frame, about 4 years. And it was, we're trying to get rid of some of these characters that are hokey and whatnot. And here is, let's use Scarface. Let's take this white dude and make him a Puerto Rican or a Cuban or whatever. Let's, you know, let's essentially say that this guy has a Coke spoon around his neck, but not really say it. But the important thing with Scott was, Scott was able to get guys like X-Pac over, right? The 1-2-3 kid doesn't work with anyone else. It fucking worked with Scott. Scott had some great matches with Taker. You know, he had some great feuds, you know, with, you know, that IC belt. And then WrestleMania 10, you know, put the ladder match on the fucking
ladder match.
So, you know, can't underestimate Scott. 14, Charlotte Flair. Charlotte Flair is by far the greatest women's professional wrestler, period. Everything that Rick brought to the, you know, to his character and everything, she's embraced it as the daughter and has in some aspects surpassed him, because there's so many guys out there, right? But with women, it's such a small fucking sample, right? And in comparison, it's just like, you can put her with anyone, right? The reason Becky Lynch is great, the reason that Sasha Banks has a career, the reason that Bayley has made all this, is because they were all associated around Flair, right? You know, now hopefully that career gets to continue a little bit longer. You know, she's been on and off with injuries for a number of years. But, you know, you can say Trish Stratus or you can say Lita in terms of women's wrestling and stuff. Yeah, they carved the way, but nobody can hold their own with Charlotte in terms of just being a pure athlete who gets it. And it's just incredible. Number 15, Kane. Fucking the big red machine. Jesus yeah. Christ. You know, you talk about a guy who went from being a fucking dentist to a fake truck. You know, you saw that this guy had potential when he was in Cornette's thing. You know, they were developing him, but they just didn't know what to do with Glenn Jacobs. And it just fucking clicked that first time that you saw him come out at Hell in a Cell and he just rips the fucking cage door off.
Yeah.
Oh, it just set it up. And then, you know, the next couple months of buildup in terms of, is he with his brother? Is he against his brother? How are the, you know, Kane and the Undertaker going to, they're going to fight at WrestleMania 14. And now the Undertaker's tombstone doesn't work because it takes, I think, 3 tombstones to put Kane out in that match and finally beat him. And then we're going to revisit that at WrestleMania 20 and, you know, have another incredible match between the two of them. As a tag team, they were incredible. You know, and then here's a guy who doesn't talk when he's brought in at all. And then it's like, oh, well, hey, use this little thing as a voice box. So they give him a voice box fucking thing. And oh, wow, Kane can talk now. This is kind of, oh, wait, we're going to unmask him? Oh my God. Look, it's Kane who's supposed to be hideously burned, but apparently just has spear makeup on. Okay.
Yeah.
But now he's, you know, he's unmasked Kane, and, you know, Glenn played that perfectly. He gets his own fucking movie, you know, See No Evil is one of the, you know, first couple WWE movies. And if you don't remember, it was released on May 19th, May 19th.
You could ever forget.
Right. So, you know, I mean, his contributions just cannot be, you know, overstated. The Iron Sheik. The Iron Sheik.
No, if that's it, one. That's yeah, one.
If it wasn't for the Iron Sheik, we don't have Hulkamania.
Agreed.
It was the perfect fucking setup. It was the right time. He was the right person. He was also one of those people that, thank God he didn't fucking listen to Vern and break Hogan's leg and fucking, you know, because he was a smart guy. And I'm sure that his paychecks and for the brand he built from that point on, it lasted for the rest of his life, you know? So it was, you know, it was a very, is the perfect villain for that time, and also worked well with Volkov as having them as tag champions, special WrestleMania 1 taken away from Wyndham and Rotundo. It was huge. So amazing there. Mr. Perfect. You know, you can't underestimate how fucking amazing Kurt Hennig was. And
absolutely
elevated that fucking Intercontinental title. And you know, the guy was charismatic. The guy had everything. And for that run of about 5-6 years exactly what you need it for a wrestler. Jake the Snake Roberts. I mean, need you say more? You know, Jake the Snake, best promos in the business, comes in as a heel. Everyone just, you know, that snake. And he was, again, the other guy. And this all happens right around 1986-87, where Savage, Piper, and Jake are all the major heels who all have to go babyface because they were so fucking popular. Like, that says a lot, that, you know, these guys became so big, and Jake was the perfect person to do what he did in terms of never having to have a title and always having to have some coke. So, you know, the coke and a smile mantra of the 80s was well done there.
Was that 1986 new flavor coke?
It was Cobra Coke. You know, Cobra Coke, very snaky. You know, it was scaly. That's why Jake manages the Luchas on fucking AEW right now, is because I'm sure that his cleaned up act went into Tony Khan's office when Tony was, you know, having a coke and a smile, and it was like, hey, you're going to manage Luchas. Makes no sense. All right. Number 19, Honky Tonk Man. Honky Tonk Man, greatest Intercontinental Champion ever. The best gimmick for something that should have just absolutely fucking sucked and been buried and gone away. And Vince wanted him to be a fucking baby face when he came in. They got rid of that very quick, and fucking it just wrote itself perfectly. What do? You have him beat Ricky the Dragon Steamboat for that fucking IC belt. And that was enough to just make him, you know, just fucking fans just not like him. And then he's the one who turns macho face. And when he fucking hit Savage with that guitar and that thing just exploded on his head. Yeah. Saturday night's event. Oh my God. It's just iconic. And you know, there was not a better run for a heel in that company, for, you know, a good year, year and a half, where every time you wanted to see him get his ass kicked. And then you finally did when the Ultimate Warrior just dropped his ass in fucking something like 32 seconds. Yeah. And you know, and that was perfect. But finally, you want to talk controversy? I'll give you controversy. Vince McMahon as a fucking character was the reason that Stone Cold fucking worked, right? He made Austin fucking take it to the next level. Because it starts with, and, you know, Rob mentioned it, you know, with Bret Hart, that whole screw job, the whole Bret screwed Bret thing. Vince capitalized on the fact that Bret was going away. Vince capitalized on the fact that Bret punched him in the fucking face. And he was able to take that and make it a fucking vignette that sold the idea that we're not the 80s company anymore. We're going to go this way. And now you have Austin and Vince, and you have Vince who teases. He has Austin in a match with his fucking arm tied behind his back. And, you know, Vince has everything, you know, going in his favor. He's going to go and he's going to fucking win the goddamn Rumble by, you know, powdering out and sitting at commentary for most of the match and putting a hit on fucking Austin and then coming back in and, you know, getting rid of Steve and winning that. And it takes Shawn Michaels to reverse that essentially and, you know, get Austin that title match at 14. Or 15 at that point. But, you know, the big thing was that Vince has that match February 14th, 1999, in a steel cage. Yeah, Valentine's Day Massacre. And, you know, you have Vince taking the fall off the cage onto the announcer table. You have Vince getting his ass kicked. And then all of a sudden Big Show comes up and we see Paul White for the first time coming from under the ring. And what does he do? He fucking throws Austin through the goddamn cage. Austin's feet hit the ground. Austin wins that way. But now we have a solidified Vince McMahon of, you know, this next 3-4 years, whatever, you know, that time frame was of him now getting in the ring occasionally, winning the championship. You know, his own ego was the driving force for that character. And, you know, for, again, if, you know, Benoit, Eddie, Kurt Angle, Jericho, they're all part of this list too. I just wanted to get some other names on there. But as, you know, as controversial as Vince is now, the idea that, and I think this is the key thing, when I was a 10-year-old kid, I didn't know Vince McMahon owned that company. I didn't know that until I was like 22. And all of a sudden, it's now being said, you know, hey, you know, Vince did this, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, wait, that fucker is owned. He's the one who owned the company.
The announcer?
That dude, yeah, seriously, you know, the dude who fucking came out and was like, stand back. And it was like,
yes, yes. I was just going to say,
right? You know,
he can dance.
He could dance at that point. And Hogan could play a mean guitar, you know, and Jesse Lee Ventura was on piano.
Right. Macho Man was playing the sax.
Yes. Macho Man was on the sax. You know,
Vince was on the sax. Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, again, the idea, and of course, you know, you had the steroids trial, that kind of exposed all of that, but you didn't see him really participating as the owner of the company until it was something that he always wanted to do, was actually get in the ring. Bischoff tried it. Bischoff couldn't do it. You know, you look at Bischoff trying to wrestle, it was awful. You looked at Vince Russo trying to wrestle, it was awful. You know, Vince did something that, you know, the other promoters, for the most part, were all wrestlers in the territories. Mm-hmm. Vince is the first who really became a successful wrestler. You know, when he really had no business, and the biggest match was the WrestleMania 17 match with him and Shane, and Vince taking that Van Terminator fucking shot from Shane. Yep. You know, I'll tell you, being in that crowd, there was nothing like storytelling in that match when you have Linda stand up out of her coma. And you have her fucking strike Trish, and you
zombie have, Linda.
Yeah. I mean, it really culminated. That was the biggest thing. And then, you know, give it to credit. Even Vince had a couple good WrestleMania matches against Taker and Shawn.
Triple H too, when he was fighting for his daughter's honor.
Yeah. And then the Armageddon match. Yeah. When, you know, Stephanie shoots him in the balls right at the end, and now is with Hunter. And then that match with Hogan that Piper came out in at 19. You know, Vince did a lot of Vince had that crimson mask a lot. And you know, for again, for a guy who you always saw, you know, the guy, give it to pay, you know, DDP, everyone talks, oh yeah, man, DDP, you know, he didn't start training until he was in his 30s, and you know, he really hit his peak at his 40s. Vince was born in 1945.
Oh, Jesus.
You know, when he started wrestling, he was already in his early 40s. So or early 50s, I should say. So, you know, sometimes steroids do help. Moral of the story. Moral of the story. Tony, less cocaine, more steroids, then you should be on TV more.
No, please. Please no.
I don't think anything we say is going to change that much. He's already made up his mind on where he's choosing to ski.
Oh, no.
Exactly.
I'm telling you, he listens to what the bad boys have to say. And I'm telling you, Tony, if you need advice, if you need training, I'm with you. I got you. I'll take you to the gym.
Is this the patriarchy now?
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I'm going to make Tony into a goddamn motherfucking wrestler.
Oh, shit.
That's my goal.
First of all, I'm surprised that you didn't mention the greatest WWE World's Heavyweight Extreme Championship Wrestling champion, Donald, not Hussein, Jesus the Savior Christ Trump. Okay, Donald J. Trump, who beat up Triple H and Stone Cold and The Rock. And they were beaten like no one's ever been beaten before. In fact, I was supposed to be in the Terminator movie and the Alien movie. I was supposed to be an alien and go with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I was going to be the one to kill the alien in the end. But there were scheduling conflicts, so I couldn't do it. But greatest champion, quite honestly, that the world has ever seen. So it's very sad that you wouldn't have me on your list. You've got to decide whether or not you're going to stay in the country. We're looking into it right now, if you're even an American.
Well, you know, it was Sports Illustrated's list. So if you want to shut down any media sites, it would be Sports Illustrated, not this podcast.
Fake Canadian news. Okay. So sad. Go join Maple Leaf Wrestling and see what their top 20 is. They don't even have 20 people on their roster.
I think we've just come up with the next special episode that we'll do. We'll do the list of the 20 greatest Canadian wrestlers.
We already talked about it. Trish and her two Stratuses.
Yes. Well, with all the love we have for Trish Stratus, she didn't make anyone's list. So
nope, not at all. Not at all.
Well, there you have it, everyone. A little long-winded, but again, when you're talking about 20 wrestlers on three different lists plus the SI list, that's a bunch of wrestlers. So,
and it is.
And we've covered the gamut in legends, old timers, new people, convicted felons, murderers. So I think we covered this list pretty well.
You know, you could describe everything you just described as Vince McMahon and Donald Trump. You hit the list with just those two guys. Imagine Vince McMahon with Donald Trump as his hype man in the corner.
Well, we kind of saw that, but against each other.
Yeah, but if they combine and Donald Trump's doing commentary, well, Vince and Kennedy McMahon is wrestling. And then you've got, he's almost as good as me. He's almost as good a wrestler as me. He did a takedown. It was such a tremendous takedown. We've never ever seen a takedown so good before.
I think Donald actually did come out and do commentary while Vince was wrestling at some point. So,
and that's one where he jumps on Triple H and he starts just punching the Jesus out of him.
God.
Yeah. So. Well, next time we'll talk about the top 20 WWE Hall of Famers in the celebrity wing.
Well, what I would want to do is the top 10 managers. I don't know if you could do all 20. Right. 20 might be stretch. That might be hard to.
We'll see.
But 10, we can easily do 10 managers.
Yeah. All right. So there you go. That's going to be some of the, we'll do 10 managers or at least 10 managers. And then since we're coming up on Christmas episodes here. So we'll probably do a special snowman holiday episode of, you know.
Let's hit the slopes, boys.
Oh, good. Well, it's baby, it's not hard.
There you go. All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in once again. And remember to catch us on a weekly basis. And until then, happy wrestling, everybody.